Well, good day and welcome to another episode here of the Disaster Podcast. We're here with another update on now Tropical Depression, or formerly Tropical Depression Florence. And we're going to get in with that update here in just a second. But before we can get on to that, I want to bring up my co-host, Sam Bradley. Hey, Sam.
Hey, Jamie. Well, it's been very dry around here in Colorado. I guess I can should be happy with that. And hopefully we have two guys in the field that we'll be able to capture here sometime soon. But in the meantime, Becky DePoglin, what is going on with this storm? Because I remember Joe saying the other day that the catastrophe is only beginning at this point. So what do you suppose he meant by that?
Well, unfortunately, fortunately, Hurricane Florence has dissipated. It's now just a low that's moving off the East Coast. But unfortunately, the rivers in North Carolina and South Carolina are still rising, which is sort of unfathomable to think about, is that the rain has ended, you know, 2-3 days ago. And Joe's right. The catastrophe is just beginning. These rivers are still going to keep rising, surpassing major flood stage, reaching levels they haven't actually ever reached before. And so we're seeing highways, like Interstate 40 is completely underwater. It's sort of surreal. It just looks like a river. If you didn't know, you would think it was just a river and there wasn't actually a highway there. So that's what Joe means, is that unfortunately the rain may be ended, but the impacts are just beginning for some people. And I think it's going to catch a lot of people off guard because they're thinking, oh, the storm has dissipated. The storm is gone. I'm safe now, but that's just not going to be the case, unfortunately, once these rivers fully reach the height of their flooding.
Well, you think if they paid any attention to media of any kind, they'd know that's not true. But I suppose everybody goes back to, well, the last time we had a hurricane. But is it not true that this has been like a record-setting wet season for them before this came along?
Yes. So Wilmington is the city I'll pinpoint for this. They were already having an extremely wet year. They have now surpassed the wettest year on record by about 4 inches, and it's September. So that kind of puts into context how historic this year is and how Florence just piled on the rain and the water amounts to that part of the region.
So, Jamie, you got some of this, didn't you, up in Maryland?
I did, and I was telling you guys before the call that I got just about between two and a quarter and two and a half inches of rain from midnight last night through about 3 o'clock this afternoon, and it really rained really crazy hard, and then would let up, and we'd have a brief bit of like respite, and then it would rain again crazy hard, and it did that off and on all night and part of the day. And it was pretty significant. I can only imagine having that storm stall over top of me for any period of time. You know, I only had to deal with it for maybe a little over 12 hours, but I can only imagine what it must have been like to have to deal with it for 72 hours. Is that correct, Becky?
Yeah, I mean, the storm stalled out for close to 3 days over the coast, mainly of North Carolina, but also reaching into South Carolina, but really the southern part of North Carolina and coastal regions and even inland had extremely heavy rain bands sit over them for hours and hours and hours, like places like Jacksonville, North Carolina, Wilmington. I think the record total, not the record, but the highest total that I've seen so far is around 36 inches of rain. Which is just an immense amount. And this parallels Harvey, but in North Carolina, it's really just kind of an amounts of rain that are hard to get your head around.
So how big an area are these floods going to reach? You know, you're focusing on North Carolina. Is South Carolina going to get a bunch of this as well?
A little bit, not quite as bad, mainly just the northern part of South Carolina. The bulk of this, unfortunately, is all in North Carolina. They're really taking the brunt of the flooding, unfortunately. And it's due in part to the previous rainfall that had occurred that made the rivers already be running very high. And then just this added insult to injury for many of these locations.
Wow. Well, so we obviously have to keep our eye on this for a while. Jamie, did one of our guests show up?
He did. So we're going to pause here. I'm going to make a note on the recorder, and we're going to bring Ben in. And we're back from our weather segment, and we're now ready to check in with the field. And we've got Dr. Joe Holly and Dr. Ben Abo here with us to talk about some of the things they've been doing as part of their rescue task force operations in, I think, North Carolina primarily. But we'll find out exactly where they've been as we check in here. And Sam, I'm going to let you go ahead and take it away.
Thank you, Jamie. So, Dr. Joe, you're, I assume, still in North Carolina somewhere and probably facing the flooding going on there, eh?
Well, that's a great description. We are finding that North Carolina is actually made up of many, 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 many islands, at least for the next few days, as the flooding continues to worsen, especially in the western, the eastern part of the state. And now we have some concerns as this the remnants of this storm begin to circle around to the right and go up through the western part of the state and butt up against the Appalachian Mountains, that the western side of the state will begin to see a lot of flooding. And, of course, that means that the eastern side of the state is going to get some more flooding, just going to take a few days for it to go from the west to the east. So they're going to get a bit of a double punch in the east for sure.
Wow. Dr. Ben, we don't even know where you are. Where are you?
Yeah, my banana phone does not have a locator device. So I am currently right by Myrtle Beach, the southwest of Myrtle Beach, in a place called South Strands in South Carolina. And we have had some assistance, and we can see the flooding. There's definitely some roads that are closed, not as much as up in North Carolina. But as to be expected, because the way that the granite is and everything from North Carolina and the rest of South Carolina, they're all expecting that the floods to come later. So the last two days, we have had some evacuations and submissions and some rescues. Not too much there. We're really expecting it to start really now with the rains and the floods that North Carolina had. Already, and then have that little bit of a delay of 3 to 4 days. And then add on top to it, as Dr. Joe said, you know, with the rains pour even more into western North Carolina, then it goes to eastern Carolina up north, and then it comes down here before it gets to the ocean. Luckily, unlike I think it was Hurricane Matthew around here, where you had Hurricane Joaquin also creeping off the coast, so that was saying storm surges, at least allow the water able to drain like Myrtle Beach in this area.
Wow. So are you with a USAR task force out there? Is that what you're doing?
Yes. Yes, okay. Yes. So I'm the medical director. I'm the commander of Florida Task Force 1, and we are here as a Type 1 team and the only ones in our region.
You want to explain what a Type 1 team does?
Yeah, so as with anything with the Army Search and Rescue, we're called a task force because I like to say we're the Swiss Army knife of rescue services, kind of. Like, you give us a task, we'll get it done. We'll figure out how to get it done. With a Type 1 team, that means I have 75 to 80 members, rescue hazmat of sorts, my canine handlers as well. The dogs obviously come with the canine handlers. And so we're a large complement, just ready for whatever we need to do.
So are you and Dr. Joe kind of aligned with his IST? Is your task force aligned with him?
Sure. So the IST, the incident support team, sort of serves two roles. Primarily is designed to support the task forces in whatever way we can, but it also sort of becomes a bit of a, you know, command and control element, I guess, of kind of directing the task forces and passing work assignments on to them and trying to keep them so that they can get the job done out in the field. You know, Ben is probably 250 miles away from me. And, you know, is the only Type 1 in that area. We have a couple of Type 3 teams in that area, too, which are about half the size, with designed to be a little bit more nimble and a little bit smaller footprint. As you can imagine, it's hard to find a place to put 80 people and, you know, multiple tractor trailers and other trucks, especially when everything is flooding and everybody is looking for shelter outside their homes. So it's hard to find a place to park all that stuff and keep them fed and watered and fueled and all the other stuff that is necessary to keep a team functional. So they're sort of serving as our, you know, core team down there with a couple of type threes in the area as well. And then we have a lot of sort of boat teams and specialty teams that are, you know, both state, local, and federal assets that are also down in that area. So Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say the reason I asked is I wasn't sure if there was just one IST for the whole operation or not, and it sounds like
there is currently only one IST, despite the fact that we're covering three states and, you know, probably 1,500 people in the field, and, you know, 30-plus USAR assets out there at the federal level. It's pretty broad ranging for sure. It's been a real challenge for us, to say the least, in doing that. But we've tried in the past utilizing two different IST teams to do that, and it's a little bit challenging because it's just confusing to the state and local partners that we work with. Who do I call? And I thought you guys were covering this area and you're not, and they're covering it. You know, it just gets confusing. And so we found that it makes more sense to sort of have one IST and then just expand it as much as we need to get the job done. So that way there's sort of a single point of contact for everything and a single source of information and direction and support.
That makes a lot of sense. But Jamie, can you imagine being in Dr. Joe's role? I certainly can't.
That's quite a bit to cover, but I think, you know, it sounds like, you know, part of the benefit, I think, for Joe from his standpoint is he's got people like Ben running the teams in the various areas, and that helps, I'm sure, quite a bit.
Oh, no question about it. You know, we rely on the task force docs to take care of the team, and in many cases to take care of the extended team, because some of these you know, like water teams would be, you know, four boats and 12 guys, and, you know, there's sort of no medical infrastructure. Those are pretty lean teams, and the idea is that they sort of append themselves to a larger task force for their support structure. Even at that, it's tough to do when you're counting on a team that's, you know, 50 miles away from you as your support. And how do you do that? So it's been a real challenge just over the geography of this one. It reminds me very much of Matthew that we had a couple of years ago that sort of ran up the eastern seaboard. And, you know, we sort of chased that storm all the way up into the northeast and had some of the same challenges where we really were spread very thin and kind of continuously moving assets to try to stay ahead of the storm. So same kind of thing here again.
I can't imagine. Ben, you still out there?
Yes, indeed.
I have to ask you this question, but what kind of issues might you have with snakes after the flood? Because in my history, it goes back to Hurricane Juan in the mid-80s, which was my very first deployment in the far south end of Louisiana. But the one thing that sticks with me is as soon as the sun came out, so did the snakes, and it was a really scary experience for a lot of people. Can you comment on that?
Nothing in particular, because we talk about documented before a storm, after a storm, there are a lot more snake bites. They're more active, and the rain and storms like this, even not even this bad, would flood them out of their homes, and they're trying to get to higher dry land. Sometimes they even cut out the boats. Just, you know, they're trying to do the same thing you'd be doing too, you know, survive. And then at the same time, they're following their food, right? So, you know, they're getting the higher ground things just like we're doing. See more snake bites, more snakes out there. And when prepping all the other teams and all, and I carry, because I have the Venom 1 and Venom 2, I have a relationship already with anti-venom companies, it's easy for me to grab it and go out the door with it. So I have plenty of anti-venom what we've come across in the wild here. And if any of my team members or something was bit, and to get it started or even treat for extended if I need to. And I've had a couple consults in South Carolina, from Florida, where I had a couple of bad snake bites that I've been helping treat via telemedicine kind of thing from a distance. And then I come up here and I'm realizing the other teams, and I'm like, you know what? I probably need some more just in case. I don't want to tempt Murphy's Law. So I called in, you know, success is measured by the size of your Rolodex, called savers, and was able to go and pick up more anti-venom just to have an extra supply just in case. And within half an hour of picking that up, and the EMS, or sorry, one of the chiefs from Miami Fire Rescue was riding with me. He drove on the, and that's when I see an article that actually misquoted, but it was New York Post. Snakes being thrown about in the storm, almost like snake NATO, or as I'm calling it, snake cane. and a friend of mine who's a friend of the Venom team, and they misquoted him. You know, number one, you don't have to worry about the exacts from the zoo. They were evacuated over a week ago to Georgia safely, so they're not suddenly getting loose. But you definitely would expect the high probability of encountering, as soon as the rain stops and everything, higher grounds and all, more encounters with snakes. I wouldn't want to put as much fear in as snake-a-cane or snake-nado as the news articles would. But it's definitely a possibility. I haven't had any bites this year. We did it during, I think it was Harvey. Not my teammates, but there were definitely people that were bit more. And we did an Irma as well. But, you know, I've seen snakes. They're out. They're back out doing their thing, minding their own business, wondering what you sir's doing.
So if you don't mess with them, maybe they won't mess with you. Jamie, you had a question.
Well, I did, because we've had a chance to talk with Joe on several occasions throughout the course of the deployment, but we really haven't had a chance to talk to Ben. So I'm curious, Ben, you know, even though you were down to the southern side of the storm in South Carolina and didn't see quite as much major flooding from the initial surge as Joe did up north, but as you said, you're expecting more to come down in the next few days, 3 to 4 days. What have you been doing, though? I know I've seen some photos from you on social media showing your task force team out with their boats and doing some rescues. So can you give us kind of an overview of when you arrived and kind of what the last few days have been like?
Well, basically, for the most part, everything's, you know, we're not paid for what we do or paid for what we're prepared to do. So we go, we mobilize, we try and figure out where we're needed. And where we're told to go, and that comes from a variety of things. How it kind of comes down, and from FEMA and the sets and the state and all this stuff. And once we have our assignments, we're kind of there and waiting to see. We've been here now a few days. We were in another place for a couple of days, in a different part. And even we braved the majority of the storm of what did hit, on the floor of a church. Just kind of waiting, and then we made our way here. We are prepping our equipment, double-checking our equipment, moving things around to make it easier for what our mission might entail or what we kind of expect. And we're also doing education, training, we're doing things on how to use GPS and marshings. I do medical education classes for everybody to kind of keep them up on snake bites or anything else. At the same time, my main function is to keep my team operational. So I'm trying to plagues and viruses and outbreaks from happening just even throughout my team to keep them operational. So that's a big part of what I've been doing personally. But the whole team, and that includes our force protection, our federal agents that are assigned for our security, keeping them operational. So it's always prepare, re-prepare, double-check our preparations, and be ready to go among with an interspersed of rescues and evacuations. And in planning and wait for further to come.
All right, that's great. Wow. And I'm wondering, Joe, because we talked about, you know, him preparing and the floodwaters coming. From your standpoint, I'm curious, because I've seen some things about the floodwaters are obviously going to be containing a lot of things coming down from the mountains, coming up from sewage treatment plants and hog farms and everything else. And we've talked about the toxic soup that happens in these floodwaters. Are you seeing the same types of things that are that might be concerning to you from a long-term health standpoint for the population and your crews?
Well, we absolutely are, Jamie. You know, the big concerns here is North Carolina particularly is a tremendous producer in the livestock industry and coal industry both. So we have these hog and hog farm, you know, lagoons where all the waste from the animals is placed. And, of course, those get flooded out, and that puts all that stuff into the water that's floating around. And we've also got lots of these coal lagoons as well, where the remnants and tailings from the coal industry end up in the water as well. So, you know, for us, it's a matter of beginning to put together sort of what the post-deployment screening is going to look like as this thing, you know, will start winding down over the next week or two. And what the teams are going to need to do to follow up on their guys to make certain that they're okay, whether that's exposures to, you know, heavy metals and things like that, right down to mosquito-borne illnesses and all that sort of stuff with, you know, the variety of illnesses that are mosquito-borne. Those are going to really be coming back around pretty soon. The guys are out in the areas all the time and are pretty high likelihood of getting bit by a mosquito and tick and all those kind of things. So all those infectious diseases. Yeah, all those infectious diseases get to be a real big deal. So we spend a lot of our time trying to protect our guys from that and then trying to, you know, follow up on them post-deployment to make sure that they're being taken care of once they're back home.
Ben, you mentioned something about ticks. How long do you monitor your guys? Because I know something like Lyme disease may not show for quite some time. Is that correct?
Yeah. So, you know, there's, you know, all the tick-borne things, Rocky Mountain spotted fever, Lyme disease, Escherichia. There's different stuff that don't really pop up right away. It can be even several weeks, and by golly, we don't let them be here by then. Kind of depends for me. I have a relationship with my team where anyway, I'm after deployment, we do our screening and everything. And I check in actually frequently, even if we don't have deployments, I check in every so often with everybody. And I have enough of a relationship where I think pretty much everyone's comfortable with if anything's up, they'll let me know. Basically, I'm trying to monitor consistently. Exactly for that reason, because who knows what's showing up or what's happening that's not showing up.
Well, that's good. I hope they're not too macho to tell you if something's wrong.
No, they know
sooner than later.
Macho, big muscle guys are just big teddy bears, and they care, and they know that I care about them, and the system cares too. So, you know, we have the heart-to-heart ahead of time, and while I'm checking them, and they know things can't get by me, and I'm just trying to look up and keep them operational both here and once we get home, and also keep the loved ones safe.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Joe, what do the next couple of days look like for you? What can you project you'll be looking at?
Well, you know, I think it's probably a bit more of the same. I think in most places in the sort of eastern part of North Carolina, most of the creeks and rivers there have reached peak and are beginning to recede a little bit. We'll still be busy in there for sure, especially, you know, the things we worry about now is that as the waters go down, people start trying to get back to their homes and they come outside and they want to cut up the tree limbs. And, you know, that's when they get into the snakes and they cut their leg with a chainsaw and they, you know, do all kinds of other foolish things. So I'm sure we're going to be busy in those areas. I think, we're very cognizant of what's going to be coming in the western parts of the state, and you know, trying to have teams in position and ready to respond if we need to over there. And then a realization that we'll probably see it all that stuff back in the east again a few days after that. So, you know, this thing is going to wax and wane like they always do. It still looks to me like North Carolina's really taken the brunt of the hit on this one. I'd say they're not done yet. They've got they've probably got another week or so to go before things begin to settle down and start returning toward normal.
Wow. Yeah, it might be a while. Ben, how about you? What do your next couple of days look like?
Hurry up and wait.
Yeah, that's the federal.
I don't know.
They used our mantra.
Kind of the same, yeah. In terms of, you know, we check in every day and we figure out what's going on. We have night operations as needed to help with the local fire rescue and work with the National Guard and their water vehicles. And as people, you know, the rule. When you go to different places, depending on what's going on, the rules of engagement change and everything in the mission. So it kind of depends. But basically, we're here to help, and we're helping through the night and through the day. And when any of us have downtime, we're making sure that we're rehabbing and ready to go out on a big rescue or whatever's needed. So it really comes down to hurry up and wait and continue our daily operations.
Well, I hope that what you're telling us gives people a true appreciation of, I mean, we've only scratched the surface on everything you guys do. So I hope folks out there appreciate the work you're doing and the fact that everybody's taking time away from their own lives and their own families to go out and help others. And I think that's the best thing in the world. You agree, Jamie?
You know, that says it well. And actually, I hope people actually appreciate just as much, if not more, the people that are back home. There's those of us like Joe and I and Dave Pfeiffer that are out right now, and we just pick up. We leave our everyday life. And you saw me post something I shared with Dave said, similar online, where, you know, we have our everyday lives that we're leaving behind to go and help strangers and kind of put ourselves at risk and do this stuff. But we wouldn't be able to do that without the support of everyone back home. I don't have a wife and kids, but I have all my coworkers and everyone that's helping cover my shifts while I'm gone. I have people that are taking care of my dog. MD 1.5, you know, so we wouldn't be able to do this without having that support at home. So there, you know, everyone at home is helping everybody here at the same time. And that's a group of people that also need to be appreciated.
Oh, I absolutely agree. They're very much underappreciated. So kudos to Kimberly and all the rest of you out there that are supporting your people in the field. Jamie, I'm going to throw this back to you.
Well, I just want to thank Joe and Ben for making some time tonight. I know you guys have got some things to get to, so we're going to go ahead and wrap this up. But we will try to check in as things progress over the next couple of days to the rest of the weekend, towards the weekend, and see if we can catch up with you maybe one more time, either then or next week on Tuesday night, and when we do the regular recording. But thanks both of you for making time to get on tonight.
Sounds great, guys. Be safe out there.
Thanks, guys.
So again, we want to thank Joe and Ben for coming in and kind of checking in with us. And Sam and I are thankful that they are able to make some time while they're having downtime, really. I mean, this is their time to rest a little bit and try to take a load off. And they took the time to call us. We do appreciate that here, Sam, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. And you can see the two of them are friends and they have a sense of humor in all of this. And I guess you pretty much have to when you're dealing with so much negative out there that people are dealing with.
Definitely. But we do want to thank some people before, in addition, and that's Paragon Medical Education Group for sponsoring the program. The Disaster Podcast wouldn't be here at all if it weren't for the initiative they showed in the very beginning to help us get the show up and running and really put this whole effort together and bring the community together to talk about things like the response for Hurricane Florence. So we want to thank Paragon for their continued support. I urge you to head over and check them out, paragonmedicalgroup.com. If you want top quality, amazing, experiential, educational training around disaster response, around mitigating disaster. You're not going to find anything any better than that. And the reason I know that is because they bring real life experience. Joe can talk to you about the hazards found in the field from hurricanes, from active shooter incidents, from building collapses, from earthquakes, from whatever the case may be for your region, because he's been deployed on so many different things. So I want you to go ahead and reach out to them, paragonmedicalgroup.com. You can also find the link over at disasterpodcast.com. Just click the link on the banner right there on the side, and it'll take you right to them. Take a moment, ask them what they can do for you. You'll be surprised how affordable this can be when they put you in touch with maybe some grant opportunities and some other things that'll help you bring this amazing training into your system. And we do appreciate all their hard work. Sam, you know, where can people find you if they want to check in with you and kind of get updates from us on what we've been checking in with people in the field about?
Well, social media, Sam Bradley or Sam Bradley 11. I know there's a lot of stuff going on. I think our Facebook site has become the place to go. That's where our community resides, and they certainly have an interest in what's going on in the field with Dr. Joe. And then certainly on the disasterpodcast.com website. How about you, Jimmy?
Well, I can be found under the handle PodMedic in most social media settings, but you can always find me over at the Disaster Podcast group on Facebook. Just search Disaster Podcast and click the link to go ahead and ask to join the group. We'd love to have you. We're fast approaching 650 members in the community over there, and that's where we post episode stuff. We post links in between through things that we see pop up during the week. And we all have discussions in the comments about that. And we share a lot of good information over there. Plus, we have a lot of our regular guests are also regularly engaging over in the group. So we urge you to check it out and become a member. Without too much further ado, I'm going to turn things back over to Sam, because we've heard all the stuff that Sam, that Joe were dealing with, that Ben is preparing to deal with, and the things that he's getting ready for, like increased numbers of snake bites in the region. But it just kind of brings it all back together of why we're all here.
Yes, it certainly does. It's just amazing what those guys are doing out there, and we do appreciate that they can, you know, get together with us once in a while. And I wanted to say something about our Facebook group, too. The community is amazing. We just did an interview with someone in our community who has like the most busy life I've ever heard of. So we love these guys. And if more of them want to come on the podcast, speak up, because we'd sure like to talk to you. But, man, if there's ever been a busier time, I don't know when it is. I think this is probably the same, at least, as it was last year with Hurricane Harvey. But it's another good example. Disaster weather is not our everyday weather.